2. The present crisis in Iran is the outgrowth of the CIA plan set in motion 2 years ago by David Rockefeller. But the four Rockefeller brothers did not live to see their war plans carried out. Instead, the remains of Rockefeller power are being carved up today by two bitter enemies on the world stage. They are the joint heirs of the situation created in Iran by the CIA, and now they are both struggling for control in the Iran crisis. As the Shah of Iran was being overthrown in the early days of 1979, the Rockefellers were being overthrown here in America. Just 10 days after the Shah fled from Iran, Nelson Rockefeller was murdered in New York City. It was the beginning of a Bolshevik coup d'etat against the Rockefellers. The Bolshevik purge here in the United States continued out of the public eye. By late February 1979, the new Khomeini regime was taking hold in Iran, and at the same time the Bolsheviks were taking control here in America. When these changes were taking place, there were headlines about Iran, but no hint of the Bolshevik coup here in the United States. As they picked up the reins of Rockefeller power and CIA planning, the Bolsheviks were in a hurry. The Bolsheviks are being expelled from their former positions of power in Russia, and they want to get even. They were trying to trigger a Middle East war by mid-May 1979, on the way to a nuclear first strike against Russia. And at the same time, they were planning to throw the world's 700 million Roman Catholics into their war against Russia. The Bolsheviks were planning to set off what was to be known as the Pope's Revolution in Eastern Europe. I gave the details of the plan in Audio Letter 42. The key to the plan was to be the papal visit to Poland on the 900th anniversary of the martyrdom of St. Stanislaus. For a while, the Bolshevik war plans were moving fast, but around Easter 1979, the Russians began intervening here in the United States. They began deploying their organic robotoids, as I first revealed in Audio Letter 46. Using them in the Middle East shuttles I described that month, the Russians prevented a Middle East war in May. Likewise, they were able to spoil the Bolshevik plan for a Pope's revolution. In early May, the Russians began eliminating Bolshevik influence in the Vatican, as I reported in Audio Letter 46, and the Pope's visit to Poland was rescheduled for June. By then, the emotion surrounding St. Stanislaus Day had cooled off, and there was no trouble. Ever since that time, the United States has been a battleground in a secret war between the Russians and the Bolsheviks here. Over the months, I have been keeping you informed about these developments. The Bolsheviks here are still trying to find a way to throw America's military power at Russia in a knockout punch. Russia's new Christian rulers are countering by a campaign to disarm the United States, starting with the SALT II Treaty. As of now, both sides, the Russians and their Bolshevik enemies, exert great power here in the United States. Russian power here is based on their agents, both human and robotoid, in top positions of power. But the Bolsheviks began infiltrating our land 30 years ago. Today, they are in every nook and cranny of America, especially the military. So the Bolshevik strategy now is to find ways to circumvent Russia's control at the top. In Audio Letter 46, I revealed how Russia prevented a Middle East war in May by means of secret Middle East shuttles. But I also revealed that their shuttles involving Iran were meeting with complete failure. Unknown to Ayatollah Khomeini, Iran was and still is swarming with Bolshevik Zionist agents, and they have been able to keep Russia virtually locked out of Iran up to now. Even so, just over 2 months ago, Russia did succeed in establishing a way to monitor what goes on around the Ayatollah. Doing this had become a top priority for Russia. Russian intelligence agents had uncovered evidence that the Bolsheviks here in America were once again moving fast toward war. Once again, the Bolsheviks were working toward a nuclear first strike against Russia. And just as before, Iran was to be used somehow as the key to the plan. But the Russians did not know exactly how Iran was to be used until late September, 2 months ago. By the time Russian intelligence had pieced it all together, there was no time to be lost. The joint Bolshevik-Zionist war plan called for a sequence of events to begin on November 20. And once it began, the chain reaction toward war was designed to be very hard to stop. As of late September 1979, the new Bolshevik war plan consisted of six major steps. Step 1 was to be a series of incidents, beginning in Saudi Arabia during the annual pilgrimage to Mecca. The incidents were being designed by the Bolshevik Zionists to inflame Muslim rage against the United States and Israel. Step 2 was to be the American embassy takeover in Tehran. Bolshevik Zionist agents in Iran had been feeding the resentment of the Iranian militants against the embassy. And under the cover of generalized rioting against the United States and Muslim countries, the embassy takeover was to be staged in Tehran. At the same time, the plan was for Saudi Arabia to be growling with rage at Israel over the incidents. This would have brought the Hate Saudi Arabia campaign of a year ago out of the closet again in the Zionist media of the United States. This was to lead to step 3. The long-planned limited nuclear strike against Saudi Arabia's oil fields by Israel. This would have been like throwing gasoline into the firestorm of Muslim passions. 700 million Muslims would have united in the spirit of the jihad, the holy war. And against this backdrop, the Bolshevik Zionist plan was to carry out step 4, the slaughter of the hostages in Tehran. In topic number 1, I explained how any such slaughter is forbidden by Islamic law. But we Americans, knowing nothing about Islam, would have automatically blamed the Khomeini government. And with American bodies coming home from Iran, like they did 1 year ago from Guyana, we would have cried out for revenge. In step 5, the Bolsheviks here in America were planning to bring about a sudden, no-notice mass deployment of American troops and equipment to Iran. The Bolsheviks had figured out how to do it without approval from the top, where it would be vetoed by Russian agents here in America. Once the troop deployment was underway, the Bolsheviks believed it would be impossible for Russia to stop without herself triggering nuclear war. And under the cover of deployment, first strike preparations would be rushed ahead by the Bolsheviks. Step 6 was to be the actual nuclear attack on Russia. This, too, is to occur without approval from top levels of the United States government. The military strategy of the attack plan is still basically as it was when I recorded audio letter 37. The main difference now is that China's western provinces are not available to the Bolsheviks in power in the United States. So Russia's Cosmosphere installations in central Siberia are targeted by the United States missiles in northern Australia, which I revealed in audio letter 42. As I also explained in audio letter 42, American war planners believe incorrectly that they can succeed in getting the missiles launched. It was not until late September that the Russians were able to piece together their intelligence and deduce this total plan. By then, the destabilization incidents in Saudi Arabia were less than 2 months away on the Bolshevik war timetable. And it was clear that some of the forces in the Bolshevik plan had already been set in motion irrevocably. Iranian militants in Tehran were already being inflamed against the United States embassy, and the provocations in Saudi Arabia were tied directly to the Muslim calendar. The situation was like a nightmare replay of the artificial troops in Cuba crisis of 2 months ago. Forces had been set in motion which the Russians could not hope to stop altogether. the Russians could see only one way to block the fast-moving Bolshevik war plan. That was to do as they had done 2 months ago in the Cuba Flap, that is, to preempt parts of the Bolshevik plan. And that, my friends, is what they are doing now in the Iran crisis. Meanwhile, their Bolshevik Zionist enemies are trying to revise their own plans and still set off nuclear war. In the secret war between the Russians and the Bolsheviks, Tehran is now the decisive battleground. Topic number 3. In the Battle of Tehran, the Russians are trying to make a shambles of the sequence of events planned by the Bolsheviks. The Bolshevik plan is to destroy Saudi Arabia's oil fields, whereas Russia is doing everything possible to prevent that. On the other hand, Iran's oil fields are to be used by the Bolsheviks as a pretext for flooding American and other troops into Iran in the preparation for the first strike. To prevent that, Russia plans to disable Iran's oil fields with airstrikes of her own if it becomes necessary. The initial step in Russia's preemptive strategy was to bring the overthrown Shah of Iran to New York City last month on October 22nd. To do this, the Russians used their Robotoid doubles for the late David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, and others whom I have identified in other tapes. The Shah was lured here with hints that he might be restored a second time to the Peacock Throne. But only his medical treatment was mentioned to the public as a cover. As expected, the Shah's arrival here caused the passion stoked up by Bolshevik Zionist agents in Tehran to explode prematurely. Iranian militants there had been led to expect the United States and Israel to do something foul toward Islam in general and Iran in particular. Reacting to the Shah's arrival here, they took over the American embassy and took hostages on November 4. This was more than 2 weeks before the triggering incidents planned by the Bolsheviks for November 20, and there was no way for those incidents to be speeded up by the Bolsheviks because they were tied directly to the Muslim calendar. But immediately, as if on signal, Bolshevik Zionist agents whipped up flames of hatred against Iranian students here in the United States. On November 6, 2 days after the takeover, Prime Minister Mehdi Bazargan resigned. This resulted from a secret meeting 1 day before the embassy takeover between Bazargan and Robotoid Zbigniew Brzezinski. It was a Russian maneuver to peel away one layer of confusion in the crisis. It thrust the Ayatollah squarely into the public eye as the only voice that really mattered in Iran. But behind the scenes, that voice is being influenced by other voices. For the next several days, all was confusion over Iran. Meanwhile, the Bolsheviks here in America began testing their ability to launch military operations without presidential approval. On Thursday, November 8, there was an alert for the Strategic Air Command and for paratroops of the 82nd Airborne. The next day, November 9, there was a dry run for a nuclear war. At NORAD headquarters near Colorado Springs, Colorado, a computer was fed false data indicating a missile attack on the United States. For test purposes, the false data said only a few missiles were on the way. But the result was a nuclear war alert to every command center of the United States military. All of our missile bases were placed on preliminary alert to be ready to launch if so ordered. And just for good measure, several jet fighters were scrambled into the air. For 6 minutes, the NORAD computer was preparing for a nuclear war. The computer thought it was a real attack. But there was no notice to the President, to the Secretary of Defense, or even to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, much less air raid sirens. Then the test was terminated. The Bolsheviks were satisfied. It had been a complete success. But it was not overlooked by the Russians. 3 days later, a similar test took place involving troops. In the pre-dawn hours of November 12, certain paratroop and other units were suddenly mobilized without previous warning. Within hours, they were converging for exercises at Fort Hood, Texas. Some 2,700 soldiers were involved, drawn from the groups which the Bolsheviks here intend to deploy to Iran. Like the No-Red War test, the Fort Hood exercise was actually set in motion without top-level approval. And once again, the Bolsheviks were completely satisfied. In addition, American troops have already been deployed secretly to forward positions in the Middle East. For example, over 2,000 American troops have recently landed on the Omani island of Mazira in the Arabian Sea. On November 11th, my friends, the war of words began heating up. That day, Ayatollah Khomeini stirred Iran with a fiery speech. To the ears of Shiite Muslims, it was a speech of dedication. But to Western ears, it may seem to be an echo of the Guyana suicide rehearsals of Jim Jones. The Ayatollah said, quote, "We are a nation of 35 million, and many of these people are looking forward to martyrdom. We will move with the 35 million. After they have all been martyred, then they can do what they want with Iran." Unquote. The next day, Robotoid Jimmy Carter announced a reverse oil embargo against Iran. The Bolshevik plan to send troops to Iran is built around creating a public impression that Iranian oil is essential to us, which, of course, it is not. So to undercut that Bolshevik ploy, it was announced that the United States refuses to buy any more oil from Iran. The same day, November 12, Russian cosmospheres were reacting to the Bolshevik triggering of exercises at Fort Hood. Russian cosmospheres were on patrol over Spain and potential American airlift routes across the Mediterranean. That day, the pilot of a Caraval jetliner in Spain saw four cosmospheres at close range. Thinking they were UFOs, he promptly landed at the next available airport. 2 days later, economic war broke out between the United States and Iran. Iran announced that it was about to withdraw its deposits from United States banks. But within hours, Robotoid Carter declared a national emergency, activating presidential emergency powers. Under that alleged authority, he froze Iran's assets here and ostensibly abroad, amounting to some $8 billion or more. The freezing of Iran's assets will lead to a collapse of the dollar abroad. That will lead, in turn, to inflation and depression here in the United States. In 1929, America exported its depression to the rest of the world, but this time, it will be imported from the collapsing dollar market overseas. On November 14, Russia also set off an earthquake in northeastern Iran, measuring 6.7 on the Richter scale. This was an attempt to distract the Khomeini government with internal problems. The next major development confounded both the Russians and the Bolsheviks. On November 16, the Khomeini government threatened to stop accepting dollars for oil. This was in retaliation for the order freezing Iranian funds here. For a few days, the media were mum about Iran, and gold prices went nowhere. Having detected no particular reaction to their threat, the Iranians decided to abandon their threat for the moment about not accepting dollars. It was the lull before the storm. The Iranian militants released 3 hostages on November 19 and 10 more on November 20. But as for the rest, the Ayatollah said, quote, "Spying has been proven by evidence," unquote. November 20, my friends, was the fateful day in the original Bolshevik plan. It was the beginning of year 1400 in the Muslim calendar. It was the beginning of the month of Muharram, of mourning for martyrs, for the Shiite Muslims of Iran. And it marked the start of the annual Muslim pilgrimage to Mecca, Saudi Arabia. In early October, Russia had alerted the Saudis through discreet channels in Kuwait to expect trouble during this year's pilgrimage. As a result, the Saudis deployed 17,000 security men in Mecca, Medina, and Jeddah. The Russians also warned the Saudis that the incidents, whatever their nature, will be coupled with evidence of American and Israeli involvement. The Saudis were warned that this was a trap designed to lure Saudi Arabia into a threatening stance toward Israel. The very survival of Saudi Arabia would depend upon the Saudis turning the other cheek, discounting these rumors, and managing the news. On November 20, large bands of armed men stormed two of Saudi Arabia's great mosques. One was the Grand Mosque in the holy city of Mecca. Three times the size of Yankee Stadium, the Grand Mosque houses within it the Kaaba, the holiest shrine of Islam, the Holy of Holies. The other mosque which was attacked was the Prophet's Mosque in Medina. As soon as the incidents began, Saudi Arabia broke communications with the outside world. Crack Saudi security forces put down the Medina incident quickly, but it took days of bloody fighting to retake the Grand Mosque. Even now, a few of the attackers are reported to be still holding out in the catacombs under the mosque. Through it all, the Saudis were the model of restraint. It was the first attack on the Grand Mosque in 1,000 years. Yet the Saudis waved it all aside as if it had been a minor incident. They said the attackers were, quote, renegades operating outside the Muslim religion, unquote, but bit their lips rather than say more. Meanwhile, the Russians made sure the focus stayed on Iran, not Saudi Arabia. The evening of November 20, the Robotoid Carter suddenly hinted broadly at possible military action against Iran. At the same time, the aircraft carrier Kitty Hawk and companion ships were ordered into the Indian Ocean. There, over the horizon, they will reinforce the carrier Midway and associated ships already there. Ayatollah Khomeini was given supposed evidence about the mosque takeovers in Saudi Arabia and denounced them as American and Israeli-inspired. Anti-American Muslim riots erupted in several countries. The American embassy in Islamabad, Pakistan, was sacked and burned, and a Marine guard was killed. The mosque attacks in Saudi Arabia had inflamed much of the Muslim world, except for Saudi Arabia itself. The war of words continues between Iran and the United States. On November 22, the Ayatollah called it a conflict, quote, between Islam and the heathens, unquote. Or in other words, a jihad. On November 26, Robotoid Carter declared the United States will discuss nothing at the United Nations except the hostages. And Ayatollah Khomeini said Iran's 20 million youth should take up 20 million rifles and prepare to fight. The next day, the Ayatollah announced that the hostages will be tried. Meanwhile, the insurgents at the embassy said that the embassy is now wired with explosives. The White House announced a pullout of non-essential State Department personnel from 11 Muslim countries. And that day, a Richter 7.3 earthquake provided new distractions for the Khomeini regime. The Battle of Tehran between the Russians and their Bolshevik Zionist enemies is building toward a climax. The Russians are convinced that the hostages are already doomed to die by their Bolshevik Zionist captors who control the situation in the embassy and who are not true Muslims. Because of this, the Russians are prepared to take military action in Iran to block any successful Bolshevik Zionist military actions there. The stage is now set for war, leading to nuclear war. But, my friends, we should reflect for a moment on how it all began. In recent weeks, we have heard continually about diplomatic immunity. We are hearing that it is a terrible crime that the United States Embassy has been captured, and yet The Rockefeller cartel captured their entire country. Is that not a crime, too? In an audio letter several years ago, I stated that the real Shah of Iran was Richard Helms, then ambassador to Iran. Having been formerly director of the CIA, Helms was operating under the cloak of diplomatic immunity in Iran. He was in league with the forces that were holding all of Iran hostage and torturing and killing thousands of Iranians. My friends, what we need today is not immunity, but accountability of everyone. We need to be rid of intrigue and maneuver, whether by Bolsheviks, Zionists, Russians, or anyone else. We need a return to fair play and a restoration of honesty and trust. We need to sweep out the cobwebs of secrecy and to light up the darkness of our world with the searchlight of truth. In Iran, we have seen a revolution take place, the revolution of Ayatollah Khomeini. Unseen forces are attempting to exploit the revolution for their own purposes, and yet it is also a very real revolution. It is an Islamic revolution of an Islamic people yearning to return to their roots. The roots of the United States of America, my friends, are Christian. But like Iran under the Shah, we too have been led far away from our roots. And what we need to do is to return to these roots in a Christian way, a way of light and truth. Through secrecy, intrigue, and double cross, we Americans have long since become hostages in our own land. But as our Lord Jesus Christ said so long ago, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.